stand by. We're about to begin. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's first quarter 2016 earnings conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will provide a general overview of Alpek's first quarter 2016 performance. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Pepe Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. First quarter results represent a positive start for the year, as favorable drivers in both of our business segments more than offset high oil and feedstock price volatility. In our polyester segment, last year's increase to the North American PTA price formula, combined with resilient demand and savings from our strategic projects, contributed to solid results this quarter. Moreover, a significant event for the domestic polyester industry took place a couple of weeks ago. On March 31st, the U.S. International Trade Commission made an affirmative final determination in its anti-dumping and countervailing duty investigations on PET resin imports from China, India, Oman, and Canada. This was the final step in the trade cases and follows the March 7 determination by the U.S. Department of Commerce, which concluded that imports of PET resin were dumped from the four countries and subsidized from China and India. As a result, PET resin imports from China, India, Oman, and Canada will be subject to anti-dumping and or countervailing duties ranging from 7.6% to 153.8% for a minimum period of 5 years. After this time, trade orders may be renewed in 5-year increments. We are extremely pleased with the Commission's unanimous vote against unfairly traded PET imports. This quarter was also marked by record results from our plastic and chemical segment, historically high polypropylene margins, and better-than-expected expandable polystyrene performance boosted EBITDA. With strong fundamentals, combining solid demand and low feedstock cost, continued driving polypropylene margin expansion. On the investment front, progress related to our strategic projects is ongoing. Construction work at the Altamira Cogeneration Plant and the Corpus Christi PTA and PET site is advancing as planned. Latest information from Hosman suggests that start-up for the MEG tolling agreement will take place during the second quarter. Other projects such as the polyester fiber expansion at our Pearl River site, the EPS expansion at our Altamira facility, and the two propylene spheres are underway. In addition to the implementation of our organic project, we completed the acquisition of BASF's 20 kiloton per year EPS plant in Concon, Chile. As of April 1st, this facility operates under Alpek's control, complementing our South American assets. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo, who will discuss our financial results.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. Oil and feedstock prices were particularly volatile during the first quarter. Reference Brent oil prices range from a 12-year low of $26 per barrel in January to $41 in March. Similarly, the U.S. reference paraxylene price reached a 7-year low in February after 7 consecutive months of decline. In this context, Alpek's first quarter consolidated revenue was down 11% year-on-year as low prices more than offset resilient volume. Besides the impact on volume, lower feedstock prices also resulted in a $9 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge that affected EBITDA. However, the first quarter consolidated EBITDA was $171 million, up 25% year-over-year, driven by solid performance in our two business segments. It is important to take into consideration two non-operating items when comparing first quarter EBITDA. First, inventory devaluation. Second, one-time gains from EPS assets acquired in South America and the sale of our polyurethane business. Adjusting for these items, Alpek's first quarter 2016 comparable consolidated EBITDA was $179 million, up 35% year-over-year and 7% quarter-on-quarter. Both polyester and plastics and chemicals contributed to EBITDA growth. Adjusting for inventory valuation, comparable first quarter polyester EBITDA was $84 million, up 12% versus first quarter 15, despite the lower feedstock price environment. EBITDA growth reflects the increase to the North America PTA price formula that came into effect in the second quarter of 2015, and incremental savings from our Cosoleacaque cogeneration facility. Our plastics and chemicals segment recorded an all-time high quarterly EBITDA. Adjusting for inventory valuation and one-time gains, comparable first quarter EBITDA was up 72%, reaching $95 million. Record polypropylene results and better than expected EPS performance were the two main EBITDA growth drivers for plastics and chemicals this quarter. Alpek's first quarter consolidated majority net income reached $72 million, up by 190% year-over-year, driven by a combination of higher operating results and lower foreign exchange losses. It is also important to note that the share of majority net income has increased significantly over the last 12 months as a result of the recovery in our polyester segment and our new wholly owned EPS business. Moving on to the balance sheet and certain cash flow items, net debt was $904 million, up by 17% year-over-year, as this quarter's strong EBITDA generation was more than offset by beginning of the year outflows. First, we pay dividends, which were comprised of $110 million to Alpek shareholders as approved at our annual shareholder meeting, and $25 million to the non-controlling interest. Second, this quarter's taxes included approximately $45 million in one-time payments related to the previous fiscal year and to the sale of Polioles EPS and polyurethane businesses. Third, an investment in net working capital that reflects a decrease in suppliers driven by lower polyester feedstock prices and, to a lesser extent, an increase in accounts receivable after a particularly low year-end balance. First quarter consolidated net debt to EBITDA was 1.4 times, and interest coverage reached 11.3 times. We expect a lower year-end net debt balance supported by operating cash flow generation in the remainder of 2016. Moving on, first quarter CapEx was $32 million. This figure was lower than in previous quarter, but progress is ongoing. We maintain our $320 million CapEx guidance for 2016, based on the schedule of our strategic project investments. Alpek's first quarter results and recent improvement in oil and feedstock prices are encouraging. We maintain our EBITDA guidance for 2016 with an optimistic outlook. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. We'll take our first question from Nikolaj Lippmann from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Gentlemen, congratulations on your very strong results, and thanks for taking my questions. Three questions, if I may. First, if you can comment a bit on what happened to net debt. Your results are great. Your CapEx is really low. In this quarter, why the increase in debt, and how should we think about working capital? That's question number one. Question number two, in terms of your plastics division, the margin is just so much above the historical norm. You can give any color on how much of that comes from the polypropylene, the EPS, or the caprolactam business, that would be very helpful. Finally, just a quick question on the strategic agenda. Clearly, M&G is priority in the near term, but as that CapEx side comes to an end, how should we think about it? Dividends, Pemex, restructuring assets, or expansion in other areas? If you could give any color, that would be helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, perfect. Nikolaj, let me ask Eduardo to answer your first question. I think he already addressed that at his presentation, but let's see what additional information he can share with you.
Sure. Thanks, Nikolaj. Yeah, the net working capital, as we mentioned, show for this quarter a significant increase, $114 million. Basically, we have several large effects in there. First, the most significant one was in suppliers. Suppliers decreased about $70 million. Basically, what happened is, first, we had a lower feedstock prices, which of course affect overall our accounts payable. Also, we had a temporary mismatch of payment versus delivery in some of our most important feedstocks. The other couple of items that show significant change, one was inventory. Again, inventories also decreased because low feedstock prices and low product inventory. Also, we had some change in accounts receivable. In the case of accounts receivable, first of all, we had a low year-end balance at the end of 2015, so the reference is a little bit of a challenge. In addition to that, we had some significant anticipated payments in Argentina in December, where some of the customers paid before the expected exchange rate changes that were expected by year-end. All in all, net working capital changed $114 million, and that was by far the most significant factor in the increase in net debt. Net debt increased $182 million. In addition to that, we also have some cash outflows that are normal for the beginning of the year. The two most important ones are the dividends. We paid $135 million in dividends. Those were the 110 dividends that we pay to our shareholders, and $25 million paid to the minority shareholders in some of our businesses. And finally, the third element was taxes. Taxes were significantly higher than previous quarters. And the reason for that, again, is first quarter, we have to finalize our fiscal reports for the previous year. We paid about $45 million in taxes from the previous year, coming basically from the sale of the polyurethane and EPS business, the profit that we had last year, as well as the very good year in terms of results in most of our business in 2015. We do not expect the net debt to continue at that level. We think that with the cash flow generation of the rest of 2016, we do expect the leverage, the net leverage, to come down by the end of the year. Our guidance, which again we are looking with a positive outlook, but we are not changing at this time, considers a net leverage of 1.3 times. Okay.
And that would be assuming any changes in working capital towards the year end, or would it be assuming roughly the same amount of days?
No, we think there's going to be a recovery in terms of working capital. And also we do expect, as we mentioned before, we do expect the CapEx to increase in the next few quarters.
And if you could give color on the where you see what's going on in the plastics division, and that you're doing different things in there, if you could get some additional color, that would be helpful.
Okay, well, Nikolai, in the plastic division, I think, as was mentioned again during the presentation, the main improvement is coming from polypropylene margins. Against our expectations last year, when we considered that the decrease in crude oil price was going to reduce our margins, what has happened in that industry is that the significant reduction in polypropylene, which went, I think, from 77 cents in October 14, to around 30 cents today. The industry has been able to keep some of the margin. Okay, so that is, I think, the main reason for the increased performance in polypropylene. Although I have to say also that that we are increasing volumes as well. The increase in volumes we see as a more permanent factor, in the sense that new projects of propylene in the U.S. have started up, which have increased the availability of the product. So we are now able to import significant quantities of propylene coming from the U.S. at competitive prices. So we do believe that this will continue, and in fact, we believe that going forward, we're going to be able to further increase our volume. So we believe, for the time being, the margins should be strong for the remaining of the year, and we still see some improvement in terms of volume. So we think the polypropylene results will continue being very strong for the remainder of the year, and to a lesser extent, but also very important, has been the performance of the EPS business. The EPS business has also performed very well in both volume and margin. We are operating the plants pretty much at capacity, so there is no significant volume upside as we still see in polypropylene until we start up the EPS expansion in Altamira. But we do believe margins will continue healthy. And so we expect, again, both of these products to improve quite a bit. Continue very strong. But in caprolactam has not performed very well in the last, I would say, 12 months. And the main reason for the non-performance of the caprolactam has been margins in Asia have been very depressed. They are showing a slight recovery recently. But even more important for us than that has been the fact that Pemex ammonia plant has not been operating at capacity. So we've been operating our plant at 66% of capacity in this time frame I mentioned, which again increases our unit cost and of course reduces our volume. So we just received news end of last week that apparently this force majeure is going to be mitigated and supposed to be working at 66% capacity utilization. We will probably increase very soon, probably as early as this week or next week, we will probably be able to operate the facility at close to 85%. So with this, I hope that caprolactam will contribute more also to the results of the plastic division.
Got it, David. Just a quick question. And from what you say, it sounds like the capacity utilization in polypropylene has gone up a lot, which is obviously a very powerful factor. Can you share with us where you are today in terms of capacity utilization?
We are operating the plant around 40 to 45, producing around in the range of 40 to 45 thousand tons per month. And we are working very hard to take it in the short term to 50,000 tons per month, which will be close to the nameplate capacity, or perhaps even a little bit higher. I could even share with you that we are already working in a project to debottleneck the plant a little bit more.
Wow. So we are so hopeful that 60, you've basically gone from 60 to 80 and you're heading towards 100.
Right.
Got it. Right. Thank you. Okay. That's very helpful. And maybe you can just a very quick comment on your strategic agenda and how,
Nikolai, I didn't quite understand your question. Could you please repeat it?
No, if you can give any color. So you'll be generating a lot of cash flow when the M&G project gets finished in a little more than a year's time. You know, how do you think about that? Obviously, there's a lot of stuff for sale in Mexico these days. I'm thinking about dividends. You were looking at glycol and backward integration there at one stage. Is that still on the agenda? If you can talk about whether that's a Mexican or U.S. thing. Right now when you're doing so well in the plastics business, just a little, any color you could share in terms of how your agenda looks.
Oh, well, we have a lot of projects in the pipeline. Mostly, apart from the projects, organic growth projects that you already know, there are several M&A opportunities that we're looking at. And I would rather not talk about those now, but there are several opportunities that we have that we consider we have a good chance of succeeding in over the next 12 months.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Diego Mendez from ITAU BBA.
Yes, guys, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I think the first one, if you could provide us a little bit of update on the PTA market in Asia, if it improved first since you last talked some months ago. And also on what you're seeing in terms of the fiber market, if we should see a further increasing going forward. And on the caprolactam market as well, if you could talk a little bit more what are expectations in terms of margins, of course, excluding all the improvement on your operations, but let's say on the caprolactam globally. Thank you.
Let me start with PTA. PPA in Asia, we are seeing a slight improvement over the last weeks. We do believe that perhaps this improvement will continue. We were in the let's say margin of PTA to paraxylene last year was in the $70 sort of range, and we now see 80s, and we've seen it gone up to 100. So right now the range seems to be more in the $80-$100 than before. There was, as I say, around the $70 range. So we see a slight improvement. However, in our financial projections and our assumptions, we are assuming that the margin of PTA to paraxylene in Asia will continue at $80 per ton over the foreseeable future. I just tell you that I feel it's more upside than downside to this assumption or to this number. So again, we are not counting on it. We are prepared to live with 80. But, yeah, there might be a good chance that this will be approaching 100, I think, in the next months. And perhaps, eventually, I think going up to 120. So I would say we are still cautious, but I would say that it seems to me that the worst is behind us. I mean, assuming no major recession or things like that, assuming it's a normal global economy. No, I would say we believe the margins are going to be slightly better than in the past 2 or 3 years. As a matter of fact, I think the capacity utilization of PTA reached its minimum level last year, and in the next years is going to recover gradually. And again, that's part of the reason why we are expecting some slight improvement in the margin. In terms of the fiber market where we are active, which is in the U.S., we have seen a recovery of the growth. I mean, the fiber market in the U.S. has been decreasing for as long as I can remember, for quite a long time. And we have seen the last couple of years some recovery in that market, mostly related to CAFTA. CAFTA being the Central America Free Trade Agreement with the U.S. And what's happening is a lot of production, particularly of meat products, is being moving to this part of the world. But they need fiber from the region. So they need fiber, basically in this case, from the U.S. And we have seen some important expansions with the fiber producers in the U.S., which are very competitive. Remember, the fiber production is intensive, relatively intensive in energy, particularly power, and very low has low intensity in terms of labor. So the U.S. is very well suited to produce yarn, fiber and yarn at very competitive prices. So we that's the reason, in fact, why we are, doing our expansion of fiber in Pearl River that should start early next year. So we do see a strength in the fiber market going forward. And then in terms of caprolactam, do not laugh, but in caprolactam we do not expect a lot of improvement in margins in the next years. Actually, when we did our last analysis, we realized that there is enough caprolactam capacity in China to satisfy the demand up to the year 2047. Okay. So there is a huge excess of capacity of caprolactam. So for that reason, we are considering that the margins of caprolactam will remain low for the foreseeable future. And we are, again, taking some strategic initiatives that will allow us to operate profitable under these very low margin scenarios. In last months, I mean, the margin of caprolactam to benzene, I guess, it was below $600 per ton. The historical margin has been around $1,100 or $1,200, but it reached a low point in the last weeks, last months, at below $600, $580, things like that. Now it has shown some recovery. It's like a little bit better. It's like $670, $75. So again, with this level of margin, I mean, in theory, you know, cash cost of the producers in Asia should be more in the 800 or 900 range. So at these prices or at these margins, these guys are losing money at cash cost. We are prepared to break even at $600 margin. So again, we are doing everything we can to survive and have some profitability even at these very low margin levels. But again, we are not expecting a significant increase in the margins.
Okay, thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question from Felipe Santos from J.P. Morgan.
Hello, good morning. Just a quick question. I know that you said that the EBITDA guidance is maintained and you have an optimist outlook, but even if we consider the beat of this quarter, and consider that the company performance kind of similar, or at least with the overall expectations over the next quarters, your EBITDA guidance would have to be reviewed upwards as soon as possible, right? I mean, you should be reaching higher numbers by the end of this year. And second factor on this is because the oil price is going up. Do you expect to deliver a revision on guidance let's say by the end of the second quarter of this year?
I will be disappointed if we cannot maintain the current pace in our results. I think we are all working hard for that to happen. Also, we see the improvement in the crude oil price that I mean, we have all seen in the last weeks. We're still we still have a lot of uncertainty of what's going to happen to crude oil prices short term. We believe, obviously, in the medium to long term, crude oil prices have to go up. In the short term, the reason for our, for this uncertainty is we still see some projects that were undertaking when prices of crude oil were high in deep water, in the Gulf of Mexico and Brazil. We still see some possibilities of some production increases. And on the other hand, there is the Libya factor. Libya has been reduced production significantly as a result of the internal turmoil. So a lot of work is being put into solving the problems in that part of the world. So if that does happen, you could see a significant increase in production in Libya. When you look at the number of rigs in the U.S. coming down constantly, what is surprising to us is, that we have not seen the corresponding decrease in production. But we do expect that third quarter this year, we will see a significant decrease in production in the U.S. And hopefully, sometime end of the year, we believe the crude oil market should be in balance. And I believe at that time, we could start to see, again, more, consistent increase in prices. But until then, I mean, from now till that time, we even see the possibility of crude oil prices going back a little bit. I don't know, you've seen, today it's coming back down, So we are not yet, we're not yet counting on higher crude oil prices. And that's perhaps the biggest uncertainty that we have in changing our guidelines. So you're right. We believe that there's going to be more clarity around this factor, these crude oil prices, by the end of this quarter. And I think at that time, we will be in a better position to revise our guidance.
That's perfect. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Sam Epibuena from Wellington Management.
Morning, gentlemen. Thank you for doing the call, and congratulations on a very good quarter. Most of my questions have been answered, but maybe just to remind us again, because I had basically the same question as the gentleman before, I'm surprised you're not revising your guidance upwards a bit. So is there, you know, something more to the story aside from what you discussed as to why not changing your guidance? I know you said you will wait until the end of 2Q to have a little more clarity on oil, but you should be able to do north of 650 based on what we've seen in 1Q. Is that a fair statement, or you are more concerned?
No, we are not concerned. As I mentioned before, I would be disappointed if we could not maintain the current peso results. I just mentioned that the factors of uncertainty factors for us, one is crude oil prices, that again, we're not sure. I mean, there could be a possibility of a comeback a little bit. So that's one factor that we want to better understand. And the other factor, to be honest, there are two other factors. Okay. The other factor would be in terms of the margins of polypropylene. Margins have increased a lot. And there is always the threat that with existing margins or with existing prices in North America, we could be inviting imports of polypropylene from Asia into the region. Okay, so that's one consideration that, again, we want to better understand if that could have an impact on the margins going forward. And the last factor that is important would be in our EPS business. In the EPS business over the last couple of months, the margins of styrene in North America versus Asia have been favorable. And, of course, we have taken full advantage of those, of that margin advantage in raw materials. But, again, this is a situation that could change suddenly. So that's another reason why we're still a little bit cautious, I would say, in changing our guidance for the year. But I do believe that we will be, if things continue as they are, we will be reviewing our guidance at the end of next quarter.
No, thank you. That's helpful. And then maybe you can sort of clarify your view on, you know, how you plan on utilizing the cash flow that you will generate. Is that going to be very similar? You talked earlier about the reversal of the working capital. I imagine there will be some dividend payment. How do you see the cash flow, the use of cash flow generation? And is there any intention to, I know the leverage seems reasonable, but to further deleverage the balance sheet?
Well, we love to reduce debt. We like that very much when we can. But the reason to have a very low leverage in the company is to take advantage of opportunities where they present themselves. And as I mentioned before, as we speak, we're looking at two or three important M&A opportunities. So if we were to be successful in those, so then this deleveraging or this cash flow will be used perhaps to undertake one of these M&A.
If I may, thank you. That's very helpful. If I may, last question on the FX. Are you concerned about, you know, sort of the volatility and in the Mex peso and dollar? How does that impact your operation?
Look, that used to be a very important factor in our results, but sensitivity to FX is not as big as it used to be because our portion of fixed cost in the total of the company has been decreasing. So when you look at the portion of our cost that are in pesos, it's lower than before. Let me just explain to you where we were much bigger in fibers. Then the FX impact was, when it was a devaluation, it was very favorable. Today is not as important as that. If I remember correctly, Eduardo, I think 1 peso if the dollar devalue or the peso devalues 1 peso versus the dollar, I think it impacts $5 million.
$5 million upwards.
Upwards over EBITDA. So if the peso would go from 17 to 18, our EBITDA in dollars would increase by $5 million. Okay, so it's not really that material anymore. It does help devaluation. So again, for me to be clear, the higher the exchange rate, the better for our results in dollars, which is a very unusual situation for a Mexican company to be in. Okay, so the more the peso devalues, the better our EBITDA in dollars is going to be. But it's only going to be, as I say, a $5 million increase per peso of devaluation.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we'll take our next question from Aiden Rodriguez from GBM.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and congratulations on an astounding quarter. As you mentioned, your guidance remains unchanged. But I wanted to ask how much the positive anti-doping ruling improves your outlook for the year. Additionally, if I may ask, if you could give us a little bit more color of how much this event benefits your business in the U.S. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Alan. I'll tell you, the anti-doping ruling is extremely important for us. I think it was critical to maintain the good trend of the company, because if we had done nothing or we had not been successful, there was this threat of these imports increasing and impacting both our margin and our volumes. The way we see it today, we do believe that this dumping result will have an impact mostly in our volume. Okay, we don't believe that there are going to be margin increases as a result of the dumping. We do believe there's going to be a volume increase. We're going to be operating at higher capacity utilizations, particularly in the U.S. And that's, of course, very, very important. But unfortunately, we have already considered that in our budget or in our guidance. We felt very sure that this was going to be the result, and this has already been included in the guidance.
Okay, thank you very much for your color.
And our next question from Chelsea Consco from TIAA.
Hi. Can you just remind me of what your dividend policy is, and are you expecting to pay more dividends this year, or was for first quarter all you plan to pay?
No, we have traditionally paid only once a year. I think you've seen the yield that we have. It's around 3% or a little bit upper, higher than 3%. I would say our policy is, to maintain, unless there are big changes, to maintain dividends in that range. And again, as I mentioned before, we seem to have now a lot of growth opportunities from M&A projects. And our future, the decision to pay more dividends or not is going to depend a lot on that. If we can capitalize those opportunities, I don't believe we will be paying more dividends. And if all of a sudden we realize that we do not have those opportunities, then perhaps that could be a, we have to reconsider the policy. But I could say, Chelsea, that I think it's unlikely that we will pay an additional dividend.
Okay, great. Thank you.
As a final reminder, ladies and gentlemen, press star one at this time for any questions. And with no questions in queue, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Lozano for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. And have a nice weekend.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.